Hi everyone, I'm Jason Scorse and welcome to another episode of Dispatch from the Zombie Apocalypse. I hope everybody is doing great. So, before getting into this episode, I want to give a few shout-outs to begin. The first is to the company Beyond Meat that coined that term, Beyond Meat, because that name captures what we need to do and why I titled the episode the way I did, Moving Beyond Meat and Dairy Culture. We're at a phase in human history where we need to move beyond this culture of destruction and cruelty and immiseration and create a new culture based on sound ethical principles and sustainability. So again, Beyond Meat, great name, and I love the, you know, love what that infers. Next up is Melanie Joy. She is an author who coined the term carnism to refer to the culture of meat and dairy that has been hoisted upon us. She's written a book on the topic that I think I've cited in a previous episode. She does talks, you know, has an organization. So check her out, Melanie Joy. And last but not least here is John Robbins, who died a few weeks ago. Some of you, maybe most of you, may not know who he is. He is a famous author who wrote Diet for a New America based back in 1987, which was really the first book to look at factory farming and the industrial meat system critically through a kind of comprehensive, holistic lens and really show how horrible it was on every level. And he dedicated his life to promoting plant-based living for, you know, his entire life was that was all he did. And you might recognize the name Robbins from Baskin-Robbins. He was the heir to the Baskin-Robbins fortune, and he turned it down. He said, I don't want to be part of a fortune based on animal cruelty and unsustainability, and literally turned down the equivalent of hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, in America particularly, that's hard to do, and that's rare, people to turn down that kind of money. I mean, it's hard anywhere, but America, a culture of so much greed and materialism, to turn down hundreds of millions of dollars basically handed to you and say no and put your ethics first, that's hardcore. And that's, by the way, a nice continuation of what I was saying in the recommendation, the antidote last episode, which is get your ethics prioritized so you know which comes first. And John Robbins said, promoting sustainability and reducing animal cruelty comes above money, comes above being rich, heir to a ice cream fortune, right? And again, rare quality, a true hero. I was fortunate enough to see him give talks a lot in Santa Cruz where he lived right when his book came out. I came to Santa Cruz in 1987 when his book came out. So I got to see him a bunch. I saw him shopping a lot. He shopped at the store that I shopped at, and he was just a super generous, nice guy, and really turned me on to veganism in a lot of ways. I can't trace my veganism 100% to him, but a lot of it to him. And so, you know, big up John Robbins and Diet for New America. If you haven't checked it out, I think there was a newer version was done, and it's kind of the Bible, really, of kind of, again, beyond animal rights, just really of kind of plant-forward eating. And again, almost 40 years ago it was written. So I want to move on to the heart of this episode by examining culture for a moment. Because again, this is what's central to this whole discussion, is the meat and dairy culture and moving beyond it. And I think I've noted this before, you know, maybe years ago when I talked about culture on a previous episode. But isn't it interesting that the root of culture is cult, right? What does that tell us? That the words are essentially the same. Cult and culture are almost identical. And yet culture we have a really positive association with for the most part. And cult we have a very negative association with. And yet they're almost the same thing, right? So the definition of culture is simply the ideas, customs, and social behavior of a particular people or society, right? Now, a cult is probably a more extreme version of that. Smaller groups of people, more intense beliefs. But it's basically, you know, any kind of ideas or customs that some group believes in, right? And we have culture everywhere. There's culture, you know, of gamers, or culture of sports aficionados, or cultures of surfers, or cultures of a nation, or of a subculture in a nation, or of LGBTQ. And even within those, there's many subcultures. So culture is complicated, and we're a part of many different cultures. There's a global culture. There's a human culture, right? So there are some prevailing myths about culture, though, that are worth unpacking, because culture kind of gets a free pass. It's kind of like faith and religion. We just kind of accept them. Like, oh yeah, culture is good. That's their culture. That's what they do. Hey, this is my culture. That's your culture. And like, we don't really take a lot of time to unpack. What does that mean? It's my culture. What does that mean? So here's some four myths about culture that I'm going to start with, and I will then apply to the meat and dairy industry. So the first is culture. Most people think of culture as old, or at least relatively old, right? It's been around for a long time. We'll see in a moment that that's not true, that a lot of things that are part of modern culture are actually quite new. People tend to think culture means good, right? That by definition, culture is good. Respect my culture, preserve my culture. My cultural traditions are sacred. So there's a kind of moral, you know, view that culture is good. And we'll see again, that's not true. There's plenty of horrible culture. There's great culture. There's some culture that's not particularly good or bad, like singing a song on a holiday or a flag or something. That's, hey, you know, it's pretty much neutral. But there's a lot of bad culture and also, of course, some good culture. But it's not by default good. Another myth. Third myth, that it's somehow largely static and set in stone because it's old. The myth of being old, it comes handed down in tradition, and therefore you don't want to touch it, right? It's static, it's set. You need to honor it, respect it, revere it, but that it's because it's a fixed kind of element. And again, we'll see very clearly that's false. And then finally, and I think this might actually be the most important, the fourth kind of great myth about culture is somehow that it comes from popular consensus, that it kind of came from the people. Over time, the people all agreed that kind of this was their shared culture. And sometimes that's true. Again, I don't want to deny that it ever happens. But usually, many things that are in culture were imposed or begun by powerful vested interests who then created these norms so that they could benefit from them, right? And we'll see in a moment, culture is incredibly powerful, right? If you're a rich and powerful interest, the best thing you can hope for is that your interests get embedded in the culture, because then the culture does the work for you. You don't have to defend what you do. You don't have to spend a lot of time advertising or promoting. Just, hey, it's just the culture, and that's what everyone does. And to kind of add on to this point here, I want to note that, remember, ethics and morality is not a popularity contest. This is just a mistake people make probably thousands of years ago, and they'll make it thousands of years from now. That somehow, just because the majority does it, it's somehow right, right? Again, ethics is not a popularity contest. Slavery, most people at one point in the world in certain cultures engaged in slavery. Slavery is one of the greatest evils of all history. And yet, in large swaths of history, the majority did it. So if you just did a survey, hey, do you think slavery is okay? You would have had large majorities saying yes, even though it was evil, right? Same thing, the oppression of women. Throughout most of human history, women have been oppressed in most cultures. That's evil, to oppress half the species and dominate them. And yet, if you took a survey, maybe not of most of the women, even though, sadly, a lot of people who get abused then kind of identify with their abusers. And even today, we see a lot of women in religion who are dominated and given less, you know, second-class citizenship, saying, hey, it's part of the religion, right? And so, again, Ethics is a separate category from popularity. It's based on principles of suffering and pain and pleasure and joy and opportunity and freedom, right? And these things have objective ways to we can measure them. They're not just willy-nilly, and we'll talk about that more. So before I get into analyzing the four myths of culture applied to the meat and dairy industry, it's just interesting to note a kind of tangential example of engagement rings. Okay, and you say, what the hell does that have to do with meat and dairy? Well, just bear with me for a second. The De Beers family, the De Beers company that owns the diamonds, basically, has a monopoly on the world's diamonds, or at least most of them. They realized diamonds, if you didn't know this, diamonds are pretty plentiful. They're not that rare. And if the De Beers family didn't have a monopoly on them, they wouldn't be that expensive, right? And so this family that owned them said, we want to create something so there'd be huge demand for this, and there's huge demand, and we control the supply, we can make a lot of money, right? Straight economics. We got a monopoly, but if no one wants it, it doesn't matter that we have a monopoly, we can't make a lot of money. But if people really want it badly and we own them, we can make a lot of money. So how do we do that? And that's how the engagement ring industry was created. It was the De Beers family created this myth around marriage, right? The most sacred kind of bond between a man and a woman and, you know, family and love. It's all our kind of our sense of self and our identity is wrapped up in this. And they said, let's make it so that a man feels he's compelled to get a diamond ring for his fiance, and the woman will feel that the man doesn't love him if he doesn't buy her a big diamond. And they created this myth, and they created this culture. And think about how pervasive that is. Almost everywhere in the world, it's like diamond engagement ring. It's just what you do. But you step back and say, where'd that come from? Who came up with that? It didn't just come from the clouds. People weren't just walking around one day and saw a diamond on the ground and said, we should associate this with marriage and engagement. It was created. And again, like I mentioned, created to benefit, in this example, one specific family and their fortune. And think of how incredibly powerful that's been. You don't see the De Beers family having to advertise anything. They just sit back and they let the culture do the work for them and reap the money. And they've been doing that for hundreds of years. Right, so that's a good example, and I think it blew my mind when I first read it, and it really blows everybody's mind when you unpack that. You go, why am I feeling like the need to drop 10 or 20 grand on a ring on a rock that's not even rare to show my love? Like, wow, it's weird shit, right? Okay, so coming to the topic of today here about the meat and dairy industry, every time you hear someone say, I can't give up meat because it's part of my culture, big agribusiness is smiling and laughing. It's like gold to them, right? These rich, powerful interests that are just, you know, torturing tens of billions of animals and laying the ecosystems of the planet to waste, torturing human beings in slaughterhouses and taking advantage of immigrant labor and poisoning this whole world. They love it. They don't have to do anything. Hey, it's in the culture. It's not us. It's in the culture, right? And they can just sit back and let that do the work for them, right? It's their holy grail, right? So I want to now kind of talk about how the meat and dairy industry defies all the myths of culture. So the first thing is, eating meat and dairy at every meal, all day, every day, like most Americans do and many in the Western who are following the Western diet, this is incredibly new. This is like 70 years, right? This is like not even a century old. You go back 100 years, people were not eating large quantities of meat and dairy all day, every day. Okay, so again, it's not old. The meat and dairy culture is not old. It's very new. And it's not good. It's not like, yeah, meat's part of my culture. That's good. No, it's the most evil industry in the world. All right, so again, culture is not by default good. Again, well, it's been around. It's just the way it is, and that's what we do. We're Americans. We eat meat and dairy all day. We eat bacon cheeseburgers. That's what we do. No, it's constantly changing, right? The bacon cheeseburger is a modern invention. That wasn't even around more than a couple decades ago. All the products that are being foisted on us all the time, it's constantly changing. And the diets of 50 years from now are going to be different. The culture of food is one of the most dynamic cultures. It is not a fixed culture. Just because you ate it growing up, or just because most people in your society eat it, does not mean that it's fixed. It's going to change. Food is very malleable. Taste is malleable, right? And again, right, this is not by popular consensus. It's not that all the people of the world got together and said, what should we eat all day? Should we drink the milk of a cow? Yeah, let's drink cow milk. Yeah, that's good. No, this was foisted upon us by big corporate industries who then got the government to subsidize their products, or in the case of the U.S., to make it a law that cow milk must be provided in schools, public schools, so that every kid has to be fed cow milk. That's not the market working. That's not popular consensus. That's not people thinking about what they want to eat. That's about an industry imposing it on the populace, right? So I want to end this segment with a key fact that needs to be stated plainly and clearly. There is no greater contradiction to liberal values than factory farming and industrial animal agriculture. Let me repeat that. There is no greater contradiction to liberal values than factory farming and industrial animal agriculture. It goes against everything liberals are supposed to stand for. Compassion, equality, sustainability, health, respect. Okay? To be a liberal and or a progressive and ignore this issue is simply a form of denialism. Wanting to look away from something simply because it's too painful and too difficult to grapple with. Real liberals don't do that. We face hard truths and we deal with them. We don't hide behind culture or tradition, but we expose oppression wherever it is and no matter how difficult. That's the liberal project. Liberation, liberal. Liberation from oppression on all levels. Okay? And let me be clear. Animal rights and factory farming doesn't have to be your top priority. That's fine. But it can't be ignored. You cannot be a liberal and just ignore it and say, you know what, I don't want to think about it. I don't care. I'm going to eat bacon, cheeseburgers, and sausage, and ice cream, and cheese, cow milk cheese every day, all day. I'm just not going to think about it. Right? It would be like saying, I'm a liberal, but I don't care about women's rights. I'm a liberal, but I don't care about voting rights. I'm a liberal, but I don't care about gay rights. It doesn't make sense, right? It goes against the whole ethic of the project. It's damaged thinking. So my goal here is not to shame anybody, not to chastise anyone, but to invite people who are liberal and progressive in many other dimensions, maybe every other dimension, except food and industrial animal agriculture, to say it's time to take a look at this and incorporate this into your liberal values. Again, doesn't mean becoming vegan overnight. But it means taking these issues seriously. As Yuval Noah Harari, the historian, states, who wrote Sapiens and Homo Deus, the treatment of livestock is the greatest crime in human history. Given that 80 billion highly sentient beings are tortured, horrifically tortured, every year for burgers and nuggets and cheese, this fact is not hyperbole. And I want to be clear. Right, when I say this and when Harari says this, people get a little weird, right? What about slavery? What about the Holocaust? This doesn't minimize those sufferings, okay? Slavery and the Holocaust were incredible crimes. But the scale of factory farming, it is orders of magnitude larger. Orders of magnitude, right? So again, whether you agree with Harari that it is the greatest crime in human history, it is one of the top greatest crime in history, and it's still going on. Unlike slavery, which is mostly done, unlike the Holocaust, which is behind us, the factory farming is happening as I speak these words, all day, every day. right? And so it's something that cannot be ignored. We must address it. So after the break, I want to expose some more of the myths specifically that the meat and dairy industry are propagating to keep their dominance of our culture. You lock the door, throw away the key. There's someone in my head, but it's not me. Thunder in your ear. You shout and no one seems to hear. And if the band you're in starts playing different tunes, I'll see you on the dark side of the moon. Okay, so I want to talk now about the myths that the meat and dairy industry have been propagating to keep their dominance of the culture. And let me be clear here, where they have a big grip on the culture, clearly, and not just American culture, but global culture, but they know that they need to make a lot of investments to keep it that way. They know the facts are against them. They know that if people see the cruelty, and then once people see the horrific aspects of the factory farming industry with their own eyes, they're going to turn away. They know that the science isn't on their side, whether it's climate or human health. So they are making huge investments to keep their dominance. It is one of the most evil industries in the world, the meat and dairy industry. But they're not stupid. They have been using a smart playbook to create distrust of plant-based options. So I want to go through a few myths that the meat and dairy industry is propagating. And again, a lot of very smart people have fallen prey to these. So the first is that vegan food is ultra-processed. This has, again, been probably their most successful, to create the connotation that vegan food is processed and to be avoided, whereas a hunk of beef or a glass of milk is a natural food, right? And again, complete bullshit, but again, but something they've been very successful at getting into people's heads. So the first thing to note is that most vegan plant food is not processed at all, right? All fruits and vegetables, nuts, grains, lentils, rice, right? Again, you can eat a complete whole foods vegan diet very easily, and it has no processing. It's probably the least processed diet on the planet. You go one step up, soy milk, almond milk, tofu. These are very minimally processed. And it's important to note also here that anything you do to food to change it at all from its original is processing. Right? So almost all food we eat is processed. And what we have not done is done a good job of saying what amount of processing is healthy and okay and normal and what is excessive and maybe not healthy. We've lumped it all together and just processed. And that, you know, inability to kind of discriminate and distinguish has given this opening for the meat and dairy. They just say, oh, vegan stuff just processed. And so bad, okay? So again, most of it, not processed at all. The next level up, minimally processed. I'll talk about one of my favorite foods in a moment that has one ingredient, red lentil flour, and it's pasta, right? Pasta is a processed food. In this case, one ingredient, they take the flour, they make it into some shapes, you know, and dry it. That's processed, but pretty close to a whole food, okay? The next up, which is what most people associate with vegan food these days, is of course the Beyond Burger and the Impossible Burger, things like that. These are more processed than what I just mentioned, the lentil pasta or the tofu or the soy milk, right? But many studies have been done saying even the processing in those, they are better nutritionally than the meat and dairy counterparts, right? They are, their profile, their health nutrition profile of a Beyond Burger, Impossible Burger is better. And the final point here is that the notion that meat and dairy are unprocessed is a complete lie, right? The first thing to note is most of these animals have been bred and modified so they don't even look anything like their natural wild counterparts. The chickens, the pigs, the cows, there's no corollary in the quote natural world. These animals have been bred for factory farms, okay? The chickens can barely even stand on their own two legs. Okay, so these are not natural animals anymore. Then they're fed all kinds of gross inputs, whether it's hormones and antibiotics, or a lot of times they're turned into cannibals and fed proteins of their own species. Right? All these animals are herbivores in the wild, right? And yet they're being fed, you know, they're ground up chicken to chickens, right? Things like that, right? Then they're stewing in horrible bacteria, right? Full of E. coli and salmonella because these slaughterhouses and these factory farms are so unsanitary. So they're then swimming in a toxic soup. A lot of times that then makes it into the meat that people consume, right? Okay, so this notion that it's not processed is just absurd. And then, of course, cheese, bacon, sausages, right? Highly processed, full of all kinds of chemicals. Way, way worse for you than anything in the Beyond Burger, which is just mostly pea protein and some, you know, beet coloring from a beet and things like that. You can add to that seafood, right? Seafood, wild seafood is not processed, right? If you catch a fish, but it is full of mercury and heavy metals and microplastics. So it's natural, it's wild, but it's full of toxic chemicals that a block of tofu is not full of, right? So again, the vegan food is ultra-processed. It's been the most pernicious myth from the meat and dairy industry, and it's bullshit. The last point I want to make with this is, let's just for a second put aside that it's a lie. By saying, I want to eat a factory farm-raised burger instead of a Beyond Burger because a Beyond Burger is, quote, processed, right? This is what you're saying if we unpack it. It's saying, since I'd rather eat the flesh of a highly sentient being that has been tortured in horrific ways, cruelly treated and slaughtered, that's soaking in a toxic stew of bacteria and E. coli, that is destroying the world's biodiversity, destroying the world's water supply, destroying the world's rainforest, one of the biggest contributors to greenhouse gases, one of the biggest contributors to horrific working conditions in slaughterhouses. But I want to eat that instead of a Beyond Burger because it's a little too processed. I don't want my peas processed. That just doesn't make any sense. That's just a bankrupt way of thinking, right? So again, if you don't want to eat processed food, fine. Don't eat the beef. Eat lentils. Eat tofu. Eat soybeans. Eat, you know, black beans, right? There's plenty of zero processed or very minimally processed plant-based food that everyone has access to, okay? The second kind of going with this theme is that plants don't have enough protein. We need protein. We need protein. So I'm just going to talk about the three top forms of protein that I eat: soy, lentils, and peas. Soy milk is just an incredible food, super high protein, and low cost. It's been around for thousands of years. I drink it in everything. I probably get 30, 40 grams of protein from soy a day. Lentils, incredible protein powerhouse. This pasta, veggie pasta, V-E-G-G-I-E pasta. One ingredient, red lentil flour. Okay? One small box that's probably two servings for a regular adult has about 50-something grams of protein plus huge amount of iron. So, one, you know, if you split the box between two people, it's 25-plus grams of protein. That's without any sauce or anything. You put some nutritional yeast and some pesto that you make with some, you know, some pistachios or sunflower seeds, you get another 5-10 grams of protein. So your little bowl of lentil pasta, 30-35 grams of protein. Peas is what they make the Beyond Burger out of, mostly the Impossible Burger. It's in Ripple Milk, Abbott Foods. You'll see this in Whole Foods. They have a line of veggie burgers and chorizo and stuff. Easy to get, you know, 20-30 grams of protein from peas, you know, in a kind of in a serving for like a dinner or a lunch. And then the Ripple Milk, I think it's 8 grams of protein per serving for a, you know, 8-ounce glass. If you eat a large, you know, drink a large glass, 15 grams of protein. So you can mix it up, right? So it's, you know, it's not all soy. So soy, lentils, and peas. And then again, dozens of other forms of protein, but you got your hemp protein, your hemp seeds, your flax seeds, your nuts, right? Tons of stuff here. Easy. Cow milk is important for kids. This is number three here, which is just the most obscene of them all, right? This notion that human children must drink the milk for cow babies. What? And that's just the norm. Think about that, right? That didn't just come out of nowhere, right? That was hoisted upon people by the industry. Let's get moms to think their kids are going to be unhealthy if they don't drink cow milk and make sure they drink it all the way through high school. You know, keep on going, right? Mother's milk, human mother's milk, incredibly important, but not cow milk. Soy milk is way better for kids. Doesn't have the hormones, right? Doesn't have any of the chemicals, antibiotics. Of course, isn't torturing the cows. And it's cheaper. This is the irony. A quart of organic soy milk at Whole Foods is cheaper than a quart of organic cow milk. So saving money and better for you. And that comes to the fourth myth that the meat industry propagates, that plant-based is more expensive. It's the elite, coastal elite food. Not at all. Not true. In fact, food services, hospitals, cafeterias, you know, hotels that are moving, incorporating more plant-based foods into the menu are saving money. And consumers can too. Everything I just mentioned to you, right? Soy milk cheaper than cow milk. Tofu, lentils, beans, pea protein. Not super expensive. And you can get your 70 to 100 grams of protein a day. No problem, right? So I want to end this segment by saying, look, all movements and ideologies and industries that need to lie to people to get them to follow them are morally bankrupt, whether it's MAGA fascism or the meat and dairy industry. And a plant-based lifestyle comes with honesty, no myths, no bullshit notions of happy cows with legs and arms running around smiling, you know, the happy burgers, right? It's happy cows and the, you know, and happy burgers running around having a party. No smiling chickens on the hot wing billboard, right? No adults with cow milk mustaches, right? Saying, got milk? Think about that. That's fucking weird. You're like a 40, 50-year-old man or woman. You got a big milk mustache and a smile. Yeah, I still drink the milk for baby cows. Yeah, that makes me what? A moron? Right, it's fucking weird, right? We don't need to live this bullshit lies. Plant-based lifestyle has simple, honest truths. And it is this. Plants have everything we need to be healthy and strong, to live sustainably and compassionately, and to live a super fulfilling and delicious lifestyle. See, no lie. Everything I just said is incontrovertible. Fact. We don't need a propaganda machine. What we need to do is combat the propaganda machine that lies about plant-based living and promotes the horrific animal cruelty of the meat and dairy industry. So again, another thing that's not that complicated. The meat and dairy industry is built on lies and death, and veganism is the way out. Veganism is the way out. After the break, I'll come back with the antidote. Okay, so for the antidote today, I want to talk about how we create a new culture and move beyond meat and dairy. It's a huge project with dozens of dimensions, and we got a lot of work cut out for us because, again, the meat and dairy industry's got a lot of money. They've embedded themselves in American culture and the cultures of the world really deeply, right? So I want to just today focus on one small sliver of the puzzle. We need to create new positive and exciting and fun elements of the plant-based lifestyle and veganism and embed them in the culture. And there's no better way to start than with the holidays. We need to create new and or modify existing holidays in ways that celebrate plant-forward living, because this is one of the most potent weapons in the carnistic arsenal, right? Tying celebrations to meat and dairy, right? People love the holidays. They love the time off. They love the getting together with friends and family. And most of those, if not all, are associated with meat and dairy. So I published this podcast a week earlier than I anticipated because July 4th is coming up. And this holiday is probably the most meat-centric of all U.S. holidays, given the barbecue culture around it. So it's time to break out the vegan barbecue. That's my recommendation for today. And showcase how awesome plant-based grilling can be. I guarantee that if this upcoming weekend you rock a vegan barbecue with Beyond and Impossible Burgers, maybe some chow cheese slices on top, and chow is C-H-A-O, for those who want them, you get some roasted corn, some portobello mushrooms, some veggie skewers, some toasted buns, and lots of awesome marinades, and you know, you can have your barbecue sauce, you have your A1 steak sauce. You do it upright. Again, you grill it real nice. You got the real nice high-end vegan cheeses. You got the mushrooms, the corn, right? You toast the buns, got all the condiments. Even your meat-loving friends and relatives are not going to feel cheated, right? They're going to feel like that was a fucking badass barbecue, and they're going to have a positive association with veganism. And then if you really want to crush it, top it off with a vegan ice cream sundae bar with Bliss coconut ice cream or Ben and Jerry's and some vegan hot fudge sauce, some coconut whipped cream, have some peanuts, some sprinkles, right? You've got a winner. Trust me, you do it like that and people, you can start demystifying veganism and plant-based lifestyle. And again, even if you who are listening now are not a vegan, just do it. Make the leap. See how amazing and fun it can be. Break out of the stifling meat and dairy culture that associates everything celebratory with roasting dead animals, right? So that's my rec for this upcoming weekend. Crush the vegan barbecue and do it right. The other vegan holiday that I just want to mention that we need to veganize is Thanksgiving. And, you know, I'm going to talk more about this when Thanksgiving approaches. But, you know, we need to kind of rock it even in a new style. Maybe Friendsgiving. Some of you guys already do that. And make it all vegan. And we'll rock all the traditional sides and then add a hearty main dish that's not turkey. Right? So I'll talk about that later in the year. But I think July 4th and Thanksgiving are the two holidays where vegans and plant-forward folks really need to up their game and step up and try to create new cultural norms. Right? This is not... You know, this is not easy stuff. It's not stuff that's going to happen overnight, but it's something we can all play a part in, right? If we can turn people on to eating plant-based and loving it on these two key holidays, we've made a significant stride in updating the culture beyond meat and dairy. Because humanity can and must do better, and we need to lead the way. So with that, everybody, I hope you're enjoying the podcast. If you are, please share it with family, friends, and colleagues. Rate it. Subscribe on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon Music. I really fucking hate 4th of July because my dog gets scared from the fireworks. And I hate the fucking jingoism. And I hate just the mindless blowing shit up. And obviously, with America now a fascist nation, it's even more fucking sicko holiday. That said, I hope you enjoy the holiday weekend. Stay safe, have fun, and rock that vegan barbecue.